Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Machaya, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, sir. How are you keeping?
Very well, thank you. Long time no speak.
Yeah, that's how times are nowadays, isn't it?
Yes, that's how times are. But have you been good?
Yeah, but I have contracted flu overnight. I'm in your court, in the high court, tomorrow morning.
Ooh.
So I need to take care of myself tonight. Otherwise, I may not be fit for the court tomorrow.
Oh, my goodness. No, we pray that you actually get better overnight, and that the hand, the healing hand of the mighty one may also be upon you. Now, let's go for it, and let's not actually take much of your time this afternoon. We're talking about, the ethical or legal issues in international intervention, and we're seeing these but quite a number of times these days, any kind of armed humanitarian intervention, or the issue of use of military force to protect the fundamental human rights of the citizens of another state, it has become increasingly important and prominent in debates about the role of ethics in international affairs. Now, we're going to be exploring the legal and ethical issues that arise in such cases. Now, Advocate, if you could please give us examples of such situations we are referring to. I think there's quite a number, but perhaps our listeners may also just want to be brought in this discussion.
Yeah. Do you still remember in 1995 or even earlier when Nelson Mandela criticized Nigeria for the handling of one of their well-known activists in Nigeria? And the Nigerian government was not happy with Nelson Mandela. And they decided to pull out the Nigerian team from the African Cup of Nations in protest of the utterances of Nelson Mandela. That they did so saying he has no right to comment or even try to interfere in the affairs of Nigeria. Whatever the circumstances, he must stop doing so. And they demonstrated it by refusing to send their team. And you remember 1996, we actually won that trophy without Nigeria being around,
I remember that.
So every state tends to be very sensitive to its sovereignty. And whatever comment you make from a distance, being in South Africa against them, or being maybe them against another state, they tend to be extremely sensitive to their sovereignty, because every country derives its sovereignty from the borders, the population, that geographical setup we normally would have for every single state.
Yeah.
So they normally fight about that. They tell you, we have a defined territory here. Don't interfere. We are a sovereign state. We are equal to you. We are a member of the United Nations, just as you are. Respect us in order for us to respect you in turn. International law says in this regard, every state that has a defined geographical setup or territory, it has a permanent population, it has a government that is able to enter into relations with other states, that particular state qualifies to be respected and to be accorded what we refer to as sovereignty. There you have it.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, thank you so much. It's interesting that, it looks like countries may not be as, sensitive, but it looks like there's a little bit of more accommodating. I mean, countries now comment a lot about what is happening in other regions. I mean, issues are happening in the DRC, for instance, and people are talking about it. Issues are happening in, Gaza, issues are happening in Iran, between Iran and Russia, etc. So there are many of these, and it looks like many countries across the world are having the freedom, the latitude to actually comment and even criticize what other countries are doing. For instance, a lot of criticism has gone against Russia with their handling of the Ukraine issue.
The Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and others criticizing and even acting, actually, South Africa as part of those acting against Israel for their, managing the situation in, Palestine, et cetera, et cetera. So are we seeing of late countries being more tolerant of this than they were some 20 years ago?
Well, let me put a prelude to what I'm going to say. International law is very much embedded in politics, and international law tries to regulate political life in all the states of the world, mm-hmm. or the people of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And in this regard, you have the United Nations as the upper guardian of the entire international law, where you have them having established the International Court of Justice, so that a state which is represented in the United Nations can actually intervene in a legal way against a state that it thinks and it deems necessary to intervene because of wrong policies and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have a situation between South Africa and Israel. You know that case.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. South Africa started by commenting. And out of the comment of South Africa just after October 7 last year,
mm-hmm.
The Israelites as well then decided that they shall comment and chastise South Africa. And South Africa commented back and eventually withdrew its representative, its ambassador in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very important act of international political life, where when you withdraw your ambassador, it means you actually mean business, and they would in turn withdrew theirs. So as we speak, between Israel and South Africa, we have no ambassadorial representations between the states. But then what happens is that South Africa, then, because it's a member of the United Nations, it invokes the Genocide Convention,
mm-hmm.
and it makes a case against the people, the Israel government.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how you actually intervene. Making comments, it's not enough. Because that makes parties to become belligerent against one another,
mm-hmm.
And it may lead to a war. But when you really do what South Africa did, you comment, you engage them, you comment, you write a letter to them,
yeah.
and in turn they write a letter to you, and you realize, these people do not understand me. You then make an application to the International Court of Justice. That court has got 15 judges. It is situated in The Hague. You know The Hague is in France.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there, these guys are appointed for a 9-year term. And as we speak now, our former Deputy Chief Justice Mosaneke is a member of that court. They are appointed for a 9-year term. They adjudicate legal disputes between countries, but also then they provide advice and legal opinion to international bodies that are recognized by the United Nations as to how to handle themselves along various questions. For instance, the question of criminal law, the question of divorce, the question of immunity, the question of contracts between states and other states, the question of employment, if one is in South Africa, is employed in another state, and there arises a dispute. These matters can at all times be taken up with the International Court of Justice. So they don't just look at, obviously, it's time that they look at peace and stability for the world.
Mm.
But their mandate is much more beyond that.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Now in South Africa, you have what we refer to as the International Immunities Act, okay? Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I'm here. The International.
Yeah, we call it the Foreign States Immunities Act.
Okay.
It's an act of 1981, so that most of the issues that I've just mentioned, marriage, contract, even the fact that, for instance, in Pretoria, you've got many of these governments having their consulates or ambassadorial offices situated there.
Yeah, yeah.
This particular act regulates situations like those.
Mm.
I remember way back when there was still, the fight between apartheid, the ANC, and APLA. The South African police and soldiers pursued our so-called terrorists at the time in Pretoria. And what they did was to run into the United States ambassadors or consulate offices. As soon as they enter there, the police could not help or do anything about it, because although that office is in South Africa, but the land is American.
Ah, okay.
And if you could never arrest them in that particular space.
Mm.
So the Foreign State Immunities Act regulates a facet of those things. And it makes many of international law to become also part and parcel of South African law.
Mm.
Incidentally, the Constitution does state that for the courts to make decisions that they come to, particularly the High Court, the FCA, and the Constitutional Court, they will at all times look at international law as to how a particular branch of law is applied in foreign states and how it can be adapted and be applied in our own country.
Mm.
That's the interesting part of international law in the Constitution of South Africa.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, what are some of the major concerns of international intervention, or as some may call it, interference?
The major concerns are around, for instance, the Geneva Convention.
Hmm.
You see, for instance, the Geneva Convention, when there has been a war, there's a case that was in South Africa in 1988 of a certain so-called terrorist, Mr. Banda, who belonged to the African National Congress and who was charged on the basis of the Internal Security Act. You remember that law of South Africa?
Yeah.
And he went to court and he told the court, you don't have jurisdiction, you yourselves, to charge me as the South African court, because I am a prisoner of war, and you know that the ANC or the PAC or any other warring faction that was there before 1994, they've been at war with the South African government. So you can't charge me under the International Security Act.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, at that stage, they had to look at what we call the Geneva Convention.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got protocols in the Geneva Convention. And I would say to people, they must go there and look at the protocols.
Yeah.
One of them is, where, like we have now in Gaza, where people are supplying medicine, are supplying humanitarian aid to the people of Gaza, there are protocols that have to be observed by Israel. Hence, you will know by now that the beginning of this month, South Africa went back to the International Court of Justice to tell them that they do not at all adhere and apply the decisions of the court as decided in March. And one of those protocols was the fact that the soldiers or the people who were coming in on a humanitarian basis were being attacked by the Israeli forces.
Yeah.
That is a transgression of international law when you do so. Hence now, there is a decision. I think that has now been, or I think they have not yet taken it out, but very soon that will come and apply, be made to apply. We will see how the court decide there. But they need, no, the decision has been made. They were told they must stop. And let the people who are supplying aid to the Gaza people be assisted, and they are being assisted on the basis of the Geneva Convention.
Oh, yeah, I remember
so
that.
You've got many of these instruments in international law.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let me for instance quote some of them that I had to go look up for you.
Mm-hmm.
We have, for instance, the Vienna Convention as an agreement where people, South Africa is a member of.
Mm.
We've got the International Cooperation on Criminal Matters. Do you remember Bushiri?
Yeah, I remember that. Mm-hmm.
Yes, that particular international cooperation in criminal matters regulates, amongst other things, extradition. We've got the extradition law, but we've got also the international cooperation in criminal matters.
Mm-hmm.
How to seek a person who is in a foreign land to come and stand trial in your own country.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got protocols. I've looked at other instruments, the Convention for the Protection of Human Rights and the Fundamental Freedoms regarding the abolition of the death penalty. You remember South Africa decided that the death penalty will not apply anymore.
Yes.
And this was one of the first decisions in State versus Magwanyane, where we were told death penalty in South Africa is against, and it is inconsistent with the constitution of this country in pertaining to the right to life.
Mm-hmm.
That is applicable here. Of course, other states are not signatories to this particular instrument. So when you are not a signatory to an instrument, you can apply the death penalty in your own country, all right?
Mm.
But when it comes to extradition, if America or Botswana is looking to have somebody from South Africa to go and stand trial in their country, one of the main requirements is that we should seek cooperation from them, that they will not apply capital law, I mean capital sentence, against that particular person.
Mm.
Not that we condone what he did, but because we are against the death penalty, if they agree they will not do so, we extradite that person to go away and stand trial in that foreign country. You have the Hague Convention of Civil International Aspects on child abduction.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, children today are abducted left, right, and
it's
center from South Africa to many countries around the world.
Very scary.
And there is an instrument that deals with that. If a child is found to be in one of the foreign countries, how to go get and make an application to get the children out of that particular country.
Mm.
So international law is vast in many other areas that we can have a look at. And I'm sure we can expand maybe on a few of those in the future.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that, Advocate. Now, to wrap our conversation, you know, the Seventh-day Adventist church as a group tends to stay out of these kinds of legal, socio-political discourses. Does that make us irrelevant in mission and ministry? Is it a case of burying our heads in the sand or behaving like all of those things walked past those who are walked past the injured man by the side of the road and the parable of a good Samaritan?
I think you are speaking from a position of ignorance in this regard, and I'm going to highlight this to you.
Yes, yes.
The Seventh Adventist Church is fully involved in humanitarian aid in Ukraine,
right?
In Gaza, as we speak, our church is fully involved there. Our church is fully involved as well in other conflict-stricken areas of Africa, where we provide humanitarian aid. And that's where the church can be involved. The church also is involved in many other instruments of the United Nations. You remember when you and I discussed about international religious laws that were there, I said the church is a signatory to various religious instruments that govern international religion and human rights pertaining to the right to you know, choices of religion in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So our church is highly, highly and deeply involved in many instances of that nature. The difference is that the church is not a government.
Yeah.
Governments are the ones that will naturally comment against another government. If a church were to be getting involved in politics, it is going to cease to be a church. It will be a political entity. You don't want to see that happening. But the church does comment a lot against humanitarian transgressions that happen all over the world. Go to the General Conference website.
Yeah.
You will see under the International Religious Liberty website of the church, even Ted Wilson, the president, they always have to call him to come and comment about various atrocities around the world and what the church's stance is regarding those areas. So we do definitely get involved in some commentary somewhat, but we don't go deep into the politics of it. That's how we look at it.
Beautiful. Well, Advocate Bangisi, I must thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Quite eye-opening, actually. I didn't know half of these things that you discussed this afternoon. And I hope that our listeners also were quite privy and very excited to have learned about these things. Thank you so much, sir.
And go some Khonsa. Thanks, man. God bless.
Go see Xasibe. Uphole. Lovely, lovely. Thank you so much.
God bless you. Sure. Okay.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.